Hey, this is Ash, All Things Dentistry, and welcome to the podcast. If you're new here, this is a place where we talk about stuff that does not go online. It's more just kind of probably me more venting and thinking out loud, to be honest, and really kind of hashing through how things went, and it's actually been really helpful. So this is a shout out to Dr. LC Lightyear. You know who you are. Dr. Lightyear is a phenomenal dentist. I have such a high respect for her. She used to work with me, or I used to work with her, how about that? And then she has now moved away. And unfortunately, she is listening to the podcast, of which I am like, please God, no. I was shocked. Anyways, let's dive into today. About 4 hours ago, patient presented with pain to tooth number 3-5, and the pulpectomy was completed about 3 weeks ago. And what's going on is the patient now could not sleep. So it's like, oh, well, let's take a look at that, see if I can deal with that. I'm not sure. So as I was listening, it's quite funny actually, the patient was seated in the operatory, and sometimes what I'll do is I'll actually listen to when they're talking to the dental system, because they sometimes relay different information to a different person. And so I was kind of listening, and well, I could see him pull out. He said, pain was so bad last night, I went and got some ibuprofen, pulls out a Motrin container, and then he also pulls out some Orajel. Like, dang. I probably had a patient pull that out before, but I was like, wow, here we are again, the Orajel. And what's really interesting is that he said, I took some of the ibuprofen, and then I took some of this. I was waiting for him to say Orajel or gum numbing stuff, and the word he told me, what I said to my dental assistant, was benzocaine. Whoa. I could not believe it. And I forgot to ask him if it worked. And I forgot to ask him, what was the other question? Dang. I forgot to ask him if it worked. There's another question I was supposed to ask him, I forgot. Anyways, neither. So visualize me walking into the operatory and sitting down and saying, hey, how's it going? What's the problem? And it turns out, pulpectomy was done 3 weeks ago. Tooth was necrotic. He confirmed that when they were doing the cold test, there was no response to the tooth. Like, okay, this tooth is actually, if you can visualize this for a second, there are no teeth missing. 3-4, 3-5, 3-6. So canine to the second molar on the lower left are all there. But for some reason, when it erupted, the 3-5, the crown kind of went in a mesio buckle kind of direction, really weird. And then it's almost like there was a cyst between the 3-4 and the 3-5, I'm not sure. So it leans forward, and then the 6 angles, it leans right again. Like, it's all kind of messed up. It's really kind of, now I'm actually thinking about it, and I'm not really describing it well. Anyways, it's angulated, and the way it's angulated with the first molar is that there's a high probability of having decay between the two teeth because it's hard to clean, and sure enough, there's decay. So that's why we're at the stage of he needed a pulpectomy. And so the pulpectomy was started, the decay was removed, provisional restoration was placed on the 3-5, and there's a pretty significant dilaceration on the apical portion of this premolar. So I go ahead and do my endodontic testing. So, most of the story actually comes from the patient telling me the story, or the diagnosis comes from a lot from the story. So he said that the pulpectomy was started 3 weeks ago, almost 2.5 weeks ago, totally fine until a week after, and then it was starting to feel sensitive. So we got some Sensodyne, said it worked for a little bit, then it didn't really work, and then the past few days, it's been spontaneous pain, waking him at night. He can't go back to sleep. There's no swelling. There's no hot and cold sensitivity. Hold on. I just threw the cat out of the bag. Hold on. So that's what he told me. So I asked him, these are some of the specific questions I ask when we have this type of situation. Do you have hot and cold sensitivity? He said, no. Does it hurt when you chew and bite? He said, no. When does it hurt? He said, usually at nighttime when I lay down and I'm sleeping. Not so much when I lay down because I'm thinking irreversible colitis, but it wakes me up at night. I can go to sleep, wakes me up. I'm like, oh, very interesting. I said, are you in pain now? He said, well, just like a chronic throb, 2 out of 10, it's there, bugging me. Interesting. I'm like, okay. And if you take a look at the radiograph, I can't tell whether it's a lesion of endodontic origin. Is it the mental foramen? Is it, you know, I mean, is it both? It's so hard to tell. And, you know, the decay, I've seen teeth with decay like that become necrotic, but I'd say only 30% of the time. Usually they're still vital, and but it has happened, and they're still vital with and no lesions. So I'm kind of like, this is really tricky to try to figure out what's going on here. I mean, I know it's the tooth, that's the issue. So clinical exam, I'll speed through all of what goes. So what's going through my mind? Well, one, is it referred pain? Is it not? Maybe the pulpectomy is done, so maybe, and it's been done to a wave and gold primary, so decent size, that's good. Not a stabectomy. We've removed most of the pulp. So is it referred pain? Is it that tooth? Is it another tooth? So all of my testing, and I did the maxillary, the opposing, comes out to symptomatic, all the testing comes out to 3-4 has a very slight response to cold, and 3-5 has no response to cold. Obviously it's pulpectomy. 3-4 has percussion sensitivity, and 3-5 has percussion sensitivity, and nothing, no other teeth have it. So I'm like, ooh. But is the 3-4 just a bystander in the crime that's being committed by the 3-5? Not sure. So what I elected to do was, let's go ahead and redo or finish the 3-5, and then let's kind of see. And it's honestly really hard to figure out whether or not, because we've got 5 between, I took a final radiograph today, but there's like 4 radiographs of different angles of the 3-5, and every angle seems to be a little bit different in giving you information whether or not the mental foramen is, and the, I think, not the, I'm not going to open my mouth and say something because I'm going to sound stupid, so I'm just going to keep that in the back of my throat. I was about to say something about, like, I'm like, this anatomic feature called the zzz, like, wait a sec, that's in the kidney. So, okay, so we numb the patient up. I do an infraalveolar block, articaine, 2.5 carps. Yes, that's what you heard, 2.5 carps on the block itself. Maybe 2¾ and a quarter carp on the mental and the buckle, long buckle. Let them sit for about 5 minutes, 8 minutes. Make sure we've got lip numbness. And make sure, and I said, we are not starting this procedure unless you have no percussion sensitivity on those teeth, because he was really percussion sensitive. So I tap like all hell's breaking loose on that tooth, and there's no pain. So I go ahead, take my 2A clamp, going to put it on the 3-5, and sure enough, guess what? Tooth is so buckly angulated, freaking thing won't fit. I'm like, of course, why didn't I think about that? 25 years, let's go, Ash. So I elected to try to bend, unfortunately, the 2A clamp over the first molar, which, of course, that's going to work, but probably ruins the clamp for future uses. So it fits, no pinching. I slide the rubber dam over the 3-5 and try to place the core seal all over the place. And yes, Dr. LC, I did try the opal dam in another case actually yesterday, and it did stick, you're right. So if you use a light cured blockout resin on dry teeth, it does seem to stick better than what I used to do is just on wet teeth. Hello, makes sense. I don't know if I'm going to change. We'll see. I'll think about it. I don't know. It probably actually would have helped today using the light block out, because when I stretched the rubber dam to go over the 3-5, the lip starts popping out underneath the dam. I'm like, are you? I'm like, seriously? So then I'm like, okay, well, I'll just take some opal dam or no. I'll take some pore seal and kind of paint the whole area, seal it up, which it does work, but maybe the opal dam be a little bit more blockout recipe, a little more clean, a little cleaner, not sure. So go ahead and access this tooth, and it has the root is kind of mesial angulated. I don't know. I can't remember. It's got a weird angulation. And every time you go in with a file, the file hits the distal buccal corner of the access, because the access, so remember I had said that there was a provisional restoration placed, and the restoration's great. However, it kind of, it's got a bowl on the inside of it at the gingival level. So there's a space between, there's some tooth structure that, and just the way the tooth is angulated, every time I took my file into this tooth, it's always hitting that damn spot every time. And at the beginning, you're kind of like, I'll just figure it out. And then every subsequent time, I'll just take my file, put it in the case. What I should have done is, because I think I wasted 5 minutes over the course of the appointment, just hitting this one spot. And we're not talking just hand files. It's like rotary files. Like you have to angulate a weird way to get it in. I'm like, oh my God, this is, why didn't I just take some flowable, build up the inside of that restoration so it flows smoothly. So every time I place my file, so that's one lesson from, you can learn from here. One lesson, just build, because you don't realize how much time that's gonna suck away from you. And the fiddledontics, they're like, oh my God. And of course the tooth is a lot, it's like a 24 millimeter tooth. So I'm trying to get a 31 mil in there. Well, hello. So, you know, if it's frustrating at the beginning, it's going to be frustrating the whole way through. So maybe just, you know, adjust your access. I'm not saying add in every case. Usually it's takeaway, make it flow smoothly. In this case, I should have added to that distal restoration on the inside, if you can visualize what I'm talking about, so my file wouldn't keep hitting that box. Anyways, I try to figure out working length, and it's going okay. It's got a curve, so I use a 31 millimeter file. I get the length of the curve. We're beeping. We're good. But remember, you know, I don't know if it's a lesion of endodontic origin or if it's the mental foramen. So I'm being very cautious because I, you know, I'm coming up to the end of my career here, and I don't want to, knock on wood, extrude sodium epichlorite onto vital structures. I don't want to be ripping calcium hydroxide out onto vital structures. I just want to help people. We all just want to help people, right? So I'm being very cautious about trying to get my working length. So let's fast back up. I dive into the tooth, and sure enough, I'm like, there's pus in the access. I'm like, what the hell? I was not expecting this. So there's pus. I'm like, oh, there's pus. I don't know, as a dentist, you kind of want to get on the intercom, like, hello, everybody, there's pus in this tooth. And then next question, maybe, is it draining? Like, not really. It's not a cool draining. It's just got pus sitting right at the access. So two things go through my mind when I see that. First one, why is it that way? Second, should I rinse this out with bleach or should I rinse it out with EDTA? The reason why I'm thinking EDTA is because I don't know if they perforated. I'm assuming not, but if I inject bleach into a lesion or a perforation, it doesn't look perforated, but the problem is that there's pus on the surface and you can't see down the canal, right? So you're kind of like, I've never been in this tooth. I don't know what's going on. So I elected to use bleach, but I did it once. I'm like, you know what? Let's just switch to EDTA. Let's get all of this stuff out of here, because EDTA, I'm not sure you're familiar with it, but apart from its use in dentistry, but it's a food preservative. Who the hell thought of using a food preservative in teeth? I don't know. But anyways, we use it. I have it. You could rinse it with saline. I am not a fan of, because I've been burned before, of having my dental assistant wash the endo access, because what happens is that forces little bits of restoration down the canal. So I wouldn't use your syringe, your air water syringe, to rinse out your pulp chamber. That can force stuff down, then that's not good. So you want to flush stuff up. So I would probably recommend, and I try my best, because sometimes I just take for granted that there's no perforation. I'm like, boom, in we go. And the apical radiograph of the calcium hydroxide did not show a perforation. So food for thought. So we start rinsing, and there's a lot of pus actually, and there's a lot of like necrotic tissue. It's now I think about it, so we're So I've actually voiced up to this point before, and I didn't know my microphone was dead. So I've actually worked through all of this. Now I'm starting to get into the thinking while I'm talking. So if I start stuttering, I apologize. I have a sip of coffee here. So I start flushing, irrigating, and I start seeing like necrotic debris. And I'm like, interesting. Nothing to note, but just like interesting. This should not be that, but I mean, we've got pus in here. I don't know why I got pus either, but whatever. Okay, and we're back. Somebody called me, sorry. And now I gotta figure out where I am. That's the funny part about doing this. So we are into the tooth. We've got pus, EDTA, and working length. And so all this debris starts coming up. And what I'm trying to do is just obviously pretty straightforward, get a working length. And then it's gonna sound like it's simple, but let me assure you that because of this little hook, this little ledge of tooth structure between the access and the distal side of the DO restoration, there's like a ledge between the axis, you know, the orifice, and then there's tooth structure and like a little table. My file hit that freaking thing every time, and I can tell you it was so frustrating. So if it sounds like, oh, wasn't that frustrating, it actually was. But I'm going to tell you the rest of the story as we go. So trying to get a working length, I'm like, it's not reading 100%. I've got this file sunk, this 25 millimeter file sunk to the hub, and I'm like, hey. When I start to do that, I start to get worried, because just like a retreat, sometimes these pulpectomies, if they've been done by somebody else, the readings, because the apical diameter might be enlarged a bit, I might not get the exact reading. And we're right around the mental foramen, so I'm like, I don't want to be injecting hypo into the tissue. I mean, that is not a good thing. Always on my mind. Always. So what I do is I get a 31 millimeter 10 file, I reconfirm that I'm able, and I tried with a 15 file, but that apical dilaceration just wouldn't allow that 15 to go around it. So I take my 10, I'm able to confirm like 25 millimeters length. Like, okay, we're going to take my primary, go to length, take my primary, and it stops 2 mils short of that. I'm like, yeah, that's to be expected, because it won't go around that bend. So now I'm starting to, you know, this has been like 15 minutes of fumbling around here. So what I do is I take my yellow and I put a apical bend on it, and by hand put it into the canal, put it so the apical bend goes towards the distal of this dilaceration. Take my hand piece, put it onto the vial and hit the gas, and boom, it goes to length. And that's how I get around all of these curves. Like, it's unbelievable how effective this technique is that I learned by reading, if you can believe, a Dentistry Today article 15 years ago. And I practiced it with extracted teeth, and it just, you know, the problem is fracturing your file, because you're starting a file already engaged into a curve. But if you practice it on extracted teeth and you get comfortable with it and use a new file, this is how I get around all these freaking things. Unless it just won't go. But I'd say 90% of the time I can do that. So I'm able to get my wavelength gold yellow around. And I think this is the problem with a lot of the pulpectomies that I see. If there's an apical dilaceration, they can't get around it. So they'll, and it's usually just short enough of the apical portal of exit where it matters in terms of tissue necrosis. So, you know, you take your primary, you don't know how to get around those curves. You can get your 10 file, but then you try to get any type of rotary file around it and it won't go. It just hits a dead stop and you're like, I'm close enough, right? Sometimes you're close enough, sometimes you're not. I can't say for one reason or another. I think it's just based on biology, whether some of these cases survive or not. It's hard to say. So I'm able to get that yellow around. When I get it around, I'm like, and I get that. It's actually a nice little, like, sweet, you actually know what the hell you're doing this one time. But on the other side of that feeling is still the concern that I'm making sure, I want to make sure, because there's vital structures around, that I'm not injecting what I've said before, hypo and calcium hydroxide, whatever, onto that mental nerve. That's really important. Vital structures. So I take my 15 file, because now I've got a yellow around, it's easier to get a 15 file around that. So place my 15, reconfirm my working length, like, yeah, it's 24. So then I do the same thing with my primary. I think I'm actually just trying to remember if I did that. So primary, I'll bend the apical 2 mils, or apical 2 mils, not the apical mil, it's impossible to do that. Bend my apical 2 mils, place that to length, and by hand, kind of engage the canal, place my handpiece, clean and shape that to length, and then same with the medium. I think actually the medium went without having to bend it. I can't remember, I'd have to look at the recording. Anyways, and then, you know, I'm like, we're going for gold here. So I opened up to the large, and I was able to get that to my working length. So I'm like, okay, perfect, got to large. Now the question that's going through my mind now is, because I haven't told you this, is that when I started cleaning and shaping with my medium, all of a sudden there's like red tissue on my flutes in the middle part of the file. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? This is supposed to be a pulpectomy that was done with calcium hydroxide in the canal a few weeks ago. So I'm like, well, this is odd. So when I started seeing that, but I'm starting to get worried that I'm now cleaning and shaping the bone and cleaning and shaping the mental nerve, right? So these are this is the reason why I'm doing the podcast, because it kind of allows you to hear kind of like, okay. And it's easy for somebody to sit back if you haven't done endo and say, well, all you need to do is reconfirm with either a radiograph or reconfirm with your apex locator. And I'm like, I agree to both of that. I hate taking working length radiographs and files because it's just so cumbersome. I have done it. I used to do it all the time. Now I rarely do it. I rely on my apex locator. But maybe I should have. In case, you know, normally when I don't get a solid reading, I will. But this, I was able to get a solid reading. And after I took my, as I debrided more of the case, there's more and more vital tissue coming out of there. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And I can't remember if I mentioned this, but the case is actually really wide mesiodistally, and it's wide buccolingually. Like, it's a huge single canal. Like, it's not there's no split, no nothing like that. It is wide. Huge. So, you know, I'm cleaning and shaping all this tissue out of there, and then I reconfirm my working length with my primary down to length and by my hand, with my hand, and it confirms right at 24 mils. I'm like, okay, well, I think we're good. So the last point of, I did a voiceover of this in my, for the advanced root canal course, because this is more advanced technique, these types of little things. Actually, it's more for the advanced course, like talking about stuff like this. And I forgot to mention this point, that I've reconfirmed my working length with a large file. Want to make sure before I start ramming lots of hypo down there, right? So it's one thing to clean and shape, go long. It's another to start irrigating a very toxic chemical out into those apical tissues. So, you know, I'm like, I'm 95% sure, but there's still 5% kind of like, eh. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to use negative pressure irrigation to reconfirm that I'm good to go. So what I like to do is I took a BCC, actually I took a 29 gauge open-ended irrigating tip from Vista, I don't know. You have a whole bunch of them. They're all over the place. I can't remember what company. But it plugged pretty quick, and it's only 20 mils long, so I'm like, it's not really effective. So I took these tips. I don't know where they're from. They're purple. We use it for BC sealer tips because they don't waste as much BC sealer. And we sterilize them. That's another tip. We sterilize BC sealer tips too, just to make sure they're sterile. I don't think it makes a damn difference, but I like the fact that they're sterile before I go to put something into somebody's body. So versus just kind of even the old way of like mixing. I think I talked about this before, like mixing sealer on a pad. Like, come on. But you never think about it, right? So we sterilize our BC sealer tips. And then this other type of tip, it's the same diameter. It's like a 50 outside diameter, like a 50. So it will go all the way. I practice on extracted on actually clear teeth with this exact thing. I can fit it all the way down to length. And I actually, you don't even need to go to full length. You can go 2 mils back and you'll still get irrigation all the way to the tip. It'll suck the irrigant all the way down and back up. And so I'm at like, I measure it, I bend it at kind of my working length, this plastic tip, I place it all the way down and it starts, I put the suction on and now I start irrigating. And sure enough, the irrigant starts coming up. Well, it starts getting sucked. Well, in common sense, it starts getting sucked up the BC sealer tip. Like, okay, yay, I'm at 23 mils. But what that tells me is that I am still in a canal, that it's not in bone unless, you know, God forbid I'm in bone and it's not suction, it is working. But if you think about this, if you vacuum up and you're vacuuming your house and you take the end off that has the brush and you've just got the straight pipe and you suck up a sock and the vacuum starts stops sucking, right? Well, it's still screaming. It's like, and you're like, okay, I gotta unblock it. Well, that's the same as negative irrigation. So if the suction tip gets plugged or it's touching like bone, for example, it'll just get plugged and no irrigant gets sucked up. So this is another method for me to confirm that, like, yeah, my working length's good. I'm still in the tooth. It's a safer way of irrigating because I'm not pushing irrigant out. It's getting sucked down and around the end. So we do that for a bit. And then the last method of confirmation is just paper points. So I was able to take paper points, put them all the way to length, bend the end once it's wet, touches the PDL, and sure enough, it's at 24 mil. So I'm like, okay, they're solid. And it may, you know, perhaps now I think about it after I've talked about this, probably a file working length probably would have made it, it probably would have helped now I think about it, probably would have solved all these problems. So maybe I'll do that next time. Maybe I won't. I was thinking about putting a gutta percha point in and taking a radiograph. So, yeah, maybe it was good to talk about it. Thank you for being my therapist, all two of you. But, so we finish off. So what I wanted to do was use a lenticular spiral. I don't use them very often, but in this case, I was kind of like, you know what? It's a really large buccal lingually and mesiodiscally. Let's go ahead and make sure we get a significant amount of calcium hydroxide all the way down to length. So we cleaned and shaped everything to 4505. We've irrigated negatively. We've sucked all the debris out. We've dried. We've confirmed our working length with paper points. It's dry. There's no blood on the paper point at all, especially along the sides, indicating a potentially a missed canal or extra debris or vital tissue. So I placed some calcium hydroxide in the coronal 1/3 of the canal. Then I take my lenticular spiral, spin it at 1,000 RPMs, 3 millimeters back from my working length. I kind of brush the walls nice and light. Don't want to break this damn thing. Because you've seen those radiographs of like people, you know, like, oh, I got this lenticular spiral out. I'm like, I don't want to be that guy having to get my own lenticular out, just fracturing a tooth. So just nice and light, and then place some Cavit. I'm kind of back on the Cavit train just because I got to go back in the tooth anyways, and it's easy to get that out. And if, as long as it's 4 millimeters thick, you've got about a month's worth of time before it starts really leaking. So go ahead and take our post-op radiograph. We've got calcium hydroxide all the way. You know, that's the moment of truth. It's like, is this going to be calcium hydroxide flowing all over the mandible or in the canal? And sure enough, right on the, looks exactly like a large gutta percha cone fit, just with lots of voids around it. And then that's it. So I'll talk to the patient, you know, post-operative instructions will include, I don't think I've mentioned them here, but pain and biting, pain should decrease, blah, blah, blah. We'll see you back in a month. We'll finish it, et cetera, et cetera. I'm on the fence about taking a cone beam, whether or not we need one. I'm not sure. I'm going to say no, but it would be helpful to diagnose if that's actually a lesion of endodontic origin or the mental foramen. Anyways, it made me think about, this is kind of the outcome. Really made me think about pulpectomy days and the importance and why was there pus? So I think part, this is kind of, so let's step back. The diagnosis was necrotic, but that doesn't mean that there's, we all know that, that doesn't mean that there's no pulp in there. It just means that the pulp is not responding to cold. Really, we have no, and according to histopathologic diagnosis, I don't even know how to use, I don't even know what that means. It just sounds like a big word, but according to that, a couple of articles in Journal of Endodontics over the years, there is a correlation of necrosis to cold sensitivity or lack thereof. Okay, we're good. Like 85% of the time, that's kind of the number I go with. And, but there's still pulp in there. So, and in the clinical notes, it, the discussion had said that there was no hemorrhage upon entering into the pulp. Okay, well, fair enough. So a 25, you know, working length was obtained. Primary was taken to length and case was closed and that's it. But what I've come to learn is that, especially in large canals, if you don't debride that canal adequately, it's going to come back to haunt everybody, especially the patient and the provider. So the provider's going to think like, well, I took a primary down to length, should be no problems. However, in this type of situation, the canal was so large that even with the calcium hydroxide on it, which actually I think now I'm actually, so now I'm thinking out loud with you. This is the thought process. I know it's a one-way conversation, but what calcium hydroxide is really effective at is dissolving tissue, killing bacteria. There's a whole, lots of articles over the years about what bacteria is effective in killing. Aethicalus, maybe not. This has got nothing to do with aethicalus. This is really it's just the placement and kind of dissolution of pulp tissue. So it dissolves some of the pulp tissue. So maybe that when I went back in there, that's possibly the reason why there was chunks of it coming out. You know, maybe there was pus because it was responding to that necrosed tissue from the calcium hydroxide and actually just lack of blood flow into some of the pulp. Because when the pulp was coming out, all my files, it was red. It looked like normal pulp in a vital case that I would do, like normal. So not the, the entire pulp was not necrosed, and I think that that was causing probably the patient's pain, especially upon percussion. So it wasn't so much that there was an infection in air quotes, it was inflammation due to those apical tissues caused from all of, you know, the swarming of the hive of our inflammatory system. Like, holy frick, guys, something happened to buddy's tooth, to our tooth. We got to sort this out. And it looks like half of the pulp is gone, but half is still here. So we need to mount some sort of inflammatory response. As well, at the same time, that pulp is, part of it's necrosing because now it's got calcium hydroxide on it. Wow, I'm really starting to sound smart here. Part of the pulp is necrosing because we've got calcium hydroxide on it. It's been rinsed with hypo. Some of it's dead. Some of it's not. Inflammatory response is mounting. Patient's starting to get pain. That chronic aching pain overnight because the pulp is now starting to get micro abscesses. And then we've got percussion sensitivity because the PDL is now inflamed and irritated. Wow. Whole bunch of nonsense. Just to say that I think when you're, this could have been the opening line. When you're doing distal canals of both mandibular teeth, palatal canals of maxillary teeth, and large central incisors, younger patients, or these random premolars, if they're really large, you gotta make sure when you, if you're doing a pulpectomy, you may need to open up to a larger size in an effort to make sure you get all of that pulp tissue out of there. Because that's essentially what a pulpectomy is a removal of the pulp, not a, we're not doing a half pulpectomy. So I'm going to follow up with the patient tomorrow and see, obviously the patient's going to be tender, but we're hoping for a relinquishing of the symptoms of waking pain. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm sorry it dragged on for probably half an hour now, but I hope this was helpful. And we'll talk to you soon. Cheers.